Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Today, we accept with humility the victory the people of Guatemala gave us. Ballot boxes have spoken, and the Supreme Electoral Court, with 93.6 of the tally, has officially recognized the result. And what the people shout about is, enough of so much corruption.
In a stunning rejection of Guatemala's ruling business and political elite, the progressive anti-corruption campaigner Bernardo Arevalo has won Guatemala's presidential election in a landslide. But will he be allowed to take office? We'll go to Guatemala City for the latest, then to South Africa, where leaders of BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, are holding a major summit as the group looks to expand.
I think this summit is going to demonstrate the coming together of the Global South in a show of unity, in a show of strength, and in a show of friendship and cooperation.
We'll go to British Columbia, where Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has deployed the military as more than 400 wildfires have forced over 35,000 people to evacuate.
As Canadians are seeing in the horrific images they see of devastation and fear of residents in Northwest Territories and in BC, it is an extraordinarily serious situation.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Guatemala, progressive politician Bernardo Arevalo has declared a decisive victory in a presidential runoff election against former First Lady Sandra Torres. Arevalo, leader of the Semilla Party, took nearly 60% of the vote Sunday. He's vowed to fight corruption and push for social reforms. His supporters poured into the streets of Guatemala City to celebrate.
Democracy won. We will be able to dream of a different Guatemala. I hope little by little we will abolish poverty. There's new hope for Guatemala. Guatemalans are happy, and we are telling these corrupt politicians they must respect our vote. Guatemala has already changed.
Bernardo Arevalo is the son of the former president, Juan José Arevalo, Guatemala's first democratically elected president, who pushed for revolutionary policies when he was in office from 1945 to 51. We'll go to Guatemala City for more after headlines. Ecuadorians also took to the polls Sunday for a snap presidential election. Leftist Luisa Gonzalez took the lead in the first round and will face Daniel Noboa in a runoff election in October, as neither candidate won over half the vote on the first round. Gonzalez is a member of former President Rafael Correa's Citizen Revolution Movement Party. Noboa is a businessman whose father, Alvaro Noboa, is one of Ecuador's wealthiest people. Alvaro Noboa is a banana industry magnate who previously ran for president, has been accused of multiple tax and labor violations. Luisa Gonzalez spoke to supporters Sunday.
No queremos un lazo 2.0.
We don't want Lasso 2.0. We don't want anybody disconnected from the people's needs, because then we would again face a situation in which we would have a president that rules for the companies and not for the needs of Ecuadorians.
At least three political leaders were killed ahead of Sunday's election, including presidential candidate Fernando Villavicencio. On Sunday, Ecuadorian voters also overwhelmingly supported a historic referendum blocking oil extraction in the Amazon's Yasuni National Park, the largest protected area in Ecuador, with massive petroleum reserves crossing through indigenous Yasuni land. The effort was spearheaded by indigenous leaders and environmental defenders. The group Yasunidos said on social media, quote, "This is the first time a nation chooses to defend life and leave petroleum underground." Tropical storm Hillary made landfall Sunday in Baja California, Mexico, and shortly after in Southern California, where authorities have warned of life-threatening floods. One person died in Mexico when their vehicle was swept away in water. School districts in Southern California and Nevada have canceled classes. In Palm Springs, the 911 emergency phone system was knocked out Sunday evening, as residents of California's desert towns say they've never witnessed such extreme storms.
A bit unprecedented. We've had storms before, but never anything quite this windy and rainy at the same time. I have a friend who just saw a 60-foot carport get blown off of his neighbor's house and carried four houses up.
Meanwhile, further north in Washington state, one person died in a growing wind-fueled wildfire near the city of Spokane. Governor Jay Inslee declared a state of emergency.
There's a beast at our door, and that's the beast of climate change. It seems like the whole world is on fire today. Yellowknife, Canada, with over 1,000 fires burning in Canada. Maui with Lahaina burnt to the ground, and now Spokane County, and 35,000 acres in fire today in Washington state.
Canada is sending its military to help tackle its record-breaking wildfires in British Columbia. So far, more than 35,000 people have been evacuated. In Hawaii, the death toll from the Maui wildfires has reached 114, with over 1,000 people still missing. President Biden's meeting today with federal, state, and local officials, as well as survivors in Hawaii. Niger's military junta said it's open to talks following the July 26 coup and has proposed a three-year transition to civilian rule. Coup leader Abdurrahman Tchiani announced the plan after meeting with delegates from the West African regional bloc ECOWAS, which has threatened military intervention and imposed sanctions on Niger. On Sunday, thousands of coup supporters rallied in Niger's capital, Niamey.
We didn't ask for this coup d'etat, but it's done. We'll take responsibility for it. But instead of punishing us, ECOWAS needs to ask the right questions. What has led us to this situation? What led to this repeated coup d'etat? Not just in Niger, but in West Africa in general. Instead of sitting down to negotiate, you put a gun on the table. You threaten us and you think you'll get something out of it.
In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, at least six children were killed in a fire at a camp for displaced flood victims. The blaze started as a child was cooking unsupervised, burning down hundreds of makeshift tarp dwellings. The UN said some 3,000 families lost their homes after recent intense flooding and mudslides in eastern DRC. Egypt's authoritarian president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, has pardoned nearly three dozen political prisoners, including a leader of the Arab Spring uprising that ousted then-president Hosni Mubarak in 2011. Ahmed Douma was freed Saturday from the notorious Badr prison after nearly a decade behind bars. In 2013, he and two other protest leaders were arrested for violating a law effectively banning public protest. His lawyer, Khaled Ali, welcomed Douma's release but called on Egyptian authorities to set other political prisoners free.
Thank God for Ahmed's release. But honestly, there are still many inside, like Alaa Abdel Fattah, Abdel Munim, Abdel Fattah, Muhammad Alas, Muhammad Oxygen, Muhammad Adel. There are also still a lot of imprisoned women. And we hope that the next time, some of them will also be released, because this is their right. So far, there has only been a focus on the male activists, but not for the women.
Saudi border guards have killed hundreds of Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers who've tried to cross the Yemen-Saudi border since March 2022. That's according to a new investigation by Human Rights Watch that relies on firsthand accounts from 42 people, over 100 verified videos and photos, and an analysis of satellite imagery. This is an excerpt of a video from HRW accompanying its report.
We found evidence that Saudi border guards have used explosive weapons and shot people at close range in what appears to be a policy targeting migrants and asylum seekers, including women and children, at the border. Human Rights Watch believes this may amount to crimes against humanity. Saudi Arabia's border forces should stop intentionally using lethal force to kill Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers with explosive weapons.
that video from Human Rights Watch. President Biden hailed a new era for cooperation between the U.S., South Korea and Japan as he hosted leaders of the two nations at Camp David Friday. It was the first such meeting between the three countries as South Korea and Japan pursue a rapprochement in the face of what they call dangerous and aggressive behavior by China in the South China Sea. The three heads of state also discussed North Korea. This is President Biden.
We're doubling down on information sharing, including on the DPRK's missile launches and cyber activities, strengthening our ballistic missile defense cooperation. And critically, we've all committed to swiftly consult with each other in response to threats to any one of our countries from whatever source it occurs.
The Biden administration will recommend COVID-19 booster shots for all this fall to ward against a new wave of infections. Vaccine makers will submit updated versions of their shots for regulatory approval that protect against the subvariants driving current infections, Eris and Fornax. While cases are on the rise, they still remain comparatively low. U.S. officials will also recommend everyone get their flu shots and RSV shots. And here in New York, Governor Kathy Hochul signed a bill banning the release of nuclear wastewater into the Hudson River. The legislation came after campaigning by activists and local communities to stop Holtec International, the owner of the decommissioned Indian Point nuclear facility, from dumping 1 million gallons of radioactive water into the Hudson. The group Food and Water Watch celebrated the law for, quote, prioritizing public health and the environment over corporate expediency, adding, quote, today, we celebrate the power of our communities over corporations. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Guatemala, progressive presidential candidate Bernardo Arevalo has won a landslide victory in a runoff election against former First Lady Sandra Torres. Arevalo took nearly 60% of the vote Sunday in an historic election. Arevalo, who's a member of the Semilla Party, has vowed to fight corruption and push for social reforms. He addressed supporters last night.
Today, we accept with humility the victory the people of Guatemala gave us. Ballot boxes have spoken, and the Supreme Electoral Court, with 93.6 of the tally, has officially recognized the result. And what the people shout about is enough of so much corruption. We would like to think the convincing result of this election will make evident that any attempt to derail the electoral process will not take place. The people of Guatemala have forcibly spoken. Otherwise, get out to ask the people that are outside in an unprecedented act in our political history. We are calm because we know Karen Herrera and I are out in front of you because this has been the convincing decision of the people of Guatemala.
Bernardo Arevalo is the son of former Guatemalan President Juan José Arevalo, Guatemala's first democratically elected leader, who pushed for revolutionary policies when he was in office from 1945 to 1951. 3 years later, in 1954, the CIA backed a coup, putting an end to democracy in Guatemala. Bernardo Arevalo's victory comes after a tumultuous year in Guatemala as the country's ruling business and political elite took extraordinary measures to maintain its grip on power. Prior to the first round of voting, election authorities barred three prominent presidential candidates, including the indigenous leader Thelma Cabrera. Then in June, Bernardo Arevalo stunned many in Guatemala when he placed second in the first round of voting after running on an anti-corruption platform. Soon after, the Attorney General's office suspended Arevalo's Semilla Party and police raided their offices. While Arevalo was allowed to keep running for president, he may still be blocked from becoming president. We go now to Guatemala City, where we're joined by two guests. Alan Nairn is an award-winning investigative journalist who's reported on Guatemala since the 1980s. And Frank LaRue also joins us, a Guatemalan human rights activist and lawyer who confronted the Guatemalan military at the height of the terror of the 1980s and brought the first case of genocide genocide against former Guatemalan military dictators, including General Rios Montt. From 2008 to 2014, he served as UN Special Rapporteur. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Frank LaRue, let's begin with you. Your response to Arevalo's overwhelming victory last night.
Well, thank you, Amy. We are really delighted. Guatemala has had a sequence of very corrupt governments, but also tied to the military, to the misdealings with organized crime. It has been an absolute mess, and this has deteriorated the justice system progressively. So all of a sudden, having a small party like Semilla, but with a wonderful history of honesty and tradition, brings about a new era of hope for Guatemala. Guatemalans really feel that the course of history is changing. I think this is really important. And this is what they expressed in the vote. The time was right because the crisis has deepened so much, especially in the current government under President Yamate. So people were desperate for an opportunity of change. And as the electoral authorities eliminated other possibilities, Semilla became the only alternative for change. And today, people are welcoming him as the new government.
Tell us more about the presidential candidate who won, Bernardo Arevalo, the son of the first democratically elected president of Guatemala. Can you talk about his rise to power right now and whether you think the political and government elite of Guatemala will actually let him take office?
Well, this is going to be the big challenge. Bernardo is a very interesting man. He is an academic. He's a very well-trained statesman, but also he has been a diplomat working for the Foreign Service of Guatemala. So he really knows the world, and he is a great analyst. But the figure of his father also is very important. His father was, like you said, the first democratic president that brought change to this country. The first labor code, the social security system was established, the new education system was established. So his father was a profound reformer after the beginning of the century with many dictatorships. And I think the image of his father keeps on shining around him. He keeps on saying, I'm not my father, but I'm trying to be honest to his memory and follow his path. So I think this played a key role in the elections as well. But more importantly, Bernardo has been a member of Congress with his party, with a very small group of congressmen for the last 4 years. And they have shown that they were above corruption. They were critics of everything else that was happening around, and they never sold out to any of the other corrupt political parties. So this is what I think gave them the image of honesty that they deserve.
And the issue of whether he will be able to take office. Can you talk about election commission and the kind of threats they have faced?
Yes, the justice system in Guatemala has deteriorated progressively, especially since the past government expelled CICIG. CICIG was this commission of the UN supporting criminal investigations. And it was very successful to challenge high-level corruption and to challenge organized crime. But it was so successful that the ruling elite and those committed to corruption wanted to get rid of it. And effectively, they moved the past government to do so. And since they left, what they did is, with the support of a corrupt prosecutor general, they turned the justice system, the criminal justice system, around. And now the attorney general is prosecuting honest judges and honest prosecutors. We have many of them in exile at this moment, 20-something of them in Washington, D.C., because they had to flee this form of persecution. The State Department has been very clear in its criticism of the attorney general and the public ministry. But now they were trying to use the public ministry to indict Arevalo and the party. But this cannot be done, because you cannot use criminal law to try to intervene in what is the area of electoral law. So it was decided at the end that only the electoral tribunal could make a decision on any party. So they pushed back on the prosecutor general. But now that the elections have ended and that Bernardo has been elected president, we are sure that they will go after the party again. We believe they're going to do two stages. Number one is they're trying to dissolve the party, saying that it had false signatures in the establishment. There may be problems with some of the signatures finding the right person, but it's irrelevant in the amount of signatures. If a party presents 20,000, 25,000 signatures, the fact that you find 200, 300 doesn't really matter. But they're trying to do that because the plan number one is to allow him to become president and Karin Herrera vice president, but you would have a government without a party. So they would not be able to really organize things in Congress or try to find followers of the party. And plan number two is then to attack the members of the party on false charges of crime, including Bernardo and Karin. I mean, obviously they have immunity for the position they have, but that immunity can eventually be lifted by Congress or by the Supreme Court, actually. And what they would do is they would try to initiate some investigation to keep the new government at bay all the time, or at least harassed by criminal law. This is truly the perfect example of lawfare in Guatemala. So we believe that the way to defend Arevalo is to build as much as a massive support of the population, like it did turn out for the vote in the elections.
I want to bring Alan Nairn into this conversation, an investigative journalist who's won many awards for his coverage of Guatemala and particularly of the U.S. involvement in the terror campaign in Guatemala that saw so many hundreds of thousands of Guatemalans killed since the 1980s. Start by talking about the significance of this election, Alan, and then go back in time, back to 1953, even before, because Bernardo Arevalo's father was the first democratically elected president of Guatemala, then the U.S. CIA coup, and what this means for Guatemalan history.
Well, I think this election was a referendum on the old regime. The old regime that was imposed when the U.S. invaded in 54 and overthrew the democracy that was just getting started with the presidencies first of Arevalo's father and then with his successor, Arbenz. What they were doing were things like basic land reform, social security, free speech, the idea of equal rights for farm workers, laborers, and the oligarchs of Guatemala and of the United States, specifically President Eisenhower and the CIA, and specifically United Fruit, found this intolerable. They sent the CIA to invade. They overthrew the nascent democratic regime, and they began an era of military dictators who worked on the principle that first, basic human equality was unacceptable as a political program, and that secondly, anyone who they imagined opposed them had to be killed. The military terror backed by the United States reached its peak in the early 1980s. There was a guerrilla movement in the mountains against the army. The army, by its own account, swept through the mountains using a strategy developed in coordination with the U.S. military attaché at the time, Colonel George Maness. Maness himself described this to me. And as they swept through the mountains, they wiped out, by their own count, 662 rural indigenous villages. They did this at the orders of the military dictators, particularly General Lucas and General Rios Montt and later General Mejia, and they did it with the full support of the United States. At the end, the wealth of the oligarchs was preserved. After the 90s, there was a series of nominally elected governments, but which gave no opportunity for social change. But now, for the first time, that whole regime that started with the overthrow of democracy and went on to include genocide, has now been repudiated by the Guatemalan public in the first chance they really got to vote on it. And this could be the beginning of a turn in Guatemalan history.
And the significance of it being Bernardo Arevalo in this historic role. And you were there for the first a primary with Bernardo Arevalo coming in second. And now this one where he really swept. Whether you believe he will be able to take office?
It's not clear yet. And it's really up to people here to decide whether that happens. In a way, the vote and the votes which they cast yesterday were the first stage of the referendum, and they supported the idea of repudiating the old regime by roughly a 60-40 margin. But now the second stage begins. As Frank just detailed, what they call the Pacto de Corruptos, the Covenant of the Corrupt, the descendants of the old massacre regime, the current rulers, they will use every level, every trick available to try to block Arevalo from the presidency. So the second phase of the voting, in a sense, for the Guatemalan public begins now, because they may have to take to the streets to defend the results of this vote. I think the fact that the vote was so overwhelming will make the regime think twice, but they're probably going to go ahead anyway. So this may, in the end, be settled in the streets in what will hopefully be a peaceful confrontation between the public and the descendants of the old regime.
And, Alan, what makes you think this is different than what took place in 2015 in terms of the mass protests at that time against corruption?
Well, in a way, that was the beginning of the process that culminated in Arevalo's election, because those protests in 15, those mass protests, which filled the plaza with many thousands of people persistently week after week, ended up bringing down General Otto Perez Molina, who was the president at the time. But he was brought down not for his role in the 80s massacres. In fact, during those massacres, when I was in the mountains and talking to the troops as they described how they would torture, strangle people to death, make them dig their own mass graves, execute them, pitch their bodies into the graves, and come back in their U.S. Helicopters and bomb and strafe villages. Those soldiers, many of the soldiers who were describing that process, were directly under the command of Perez Molina. And I actually met Perez Molina in the mountain at the time. He was using an alias. He was known as Major Tito. But he was the one, he was one of Rios, General Rios Montt's field commander for the slaughter. But he, after he later rose to general and became a director of military intelligence and became an asset of the U.S. CIA, after that, he was elected president. And in office, he was, in the end, brought down by these mass demonstrations and by the prosecution of the UN-backed special prosecutor, CSIC, which Frank mentioned. But he was brought down not for his role in the massacres, but for his being a thief, for his being corrupt. But after Pérez Molina was ousted, he was just replaced by more of the same, and the popular movement did not have the leverage to go any further. Now, though, with Arevalo, if he can take office, there is the potential that they can actually, as a representative, through the representation of Arevalo, the popular movement can actually begin to wield state power, or at least the state power that the president will be able to exercise, because he will be hemmed in by a hostile Congress and the powerful forces of the oligarchy, which is still intact. But having the presidency can make a tremendous difference. And this really could be the beginning of the end what could best be described as the U.S. invasion genocide era, an era that started in 54 and possibly started to conclude yesterday.
Frank LaRue, I want to turn to Guatemalan President Alejandro